Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hello and welcome to the show with me, Gillian Gotzel. Today, my guest is Tim Draper. Now, Tim needs no introduction. Only if you're listening to this and you don't know who he is, maybe you're on the wrong podcast. Or actually, hand on a moment, hang on here because you could learn something. So Tim, you are very, very well known, a bit of a legend, VC, billionaire and investing in Bitcoin since 2014. That's a short introduction. So looking forward to
2012, but who's counting?
I've got a question about that later. Sorry about that. But anyway, I'm going to ask you a few questions. Hopefully you haven't been asked them too many times before. And I look forward to our next little while together. So first of all, we know you can pick winners, right? You've picked, you know, pre-Bitcoin, it was Hotmail, Skype, Tesla, SpaceX. Then you've been invested in Coinbase and Ledger and Telos. So you've got a huge, and 50 other ones, I may add. So you've got a huge track record. My question is, I know you get asked all the time.
I pick losers too.
That's my question. I know you pick winners all the time, but how do you pick losers? When you look back on the losers that you picked, is there anything that you go, ah, I should have seen that. That's what the loser client is.
No, I mean, I guess the ones that don't, I mean, there are two sets of losers, one where they go completely out of business and one where they just don't get us our money back. And then there are the winners, and there are some that make us a couple times on the money and some that make us a thousand times on the money. And they all kind of have different qualities. But I think to win, entrepreneurs have to build trust amongst themselves, their team, their employees, their customers. So trust is a big thing. They have to feel free to innovate. They can't feel like they're overwhelmed by government regulations or whatever. And I think that they have to have a single decision maker, but at least a single decision maker in each category of business, and with a sort of faith amongst the team. I think that makes a big difference. And it's hard for me to read that when I first meet the entrepreneur. Now, the other thing is that the big winners are usually the ones that are a little bit odd at first, where it's just like, whoa, what are you doing? It's something where it's a little different. You know, free web-based email, what are you thinking? You know, that was Hotmail. Skype was a little odd too. They actually changed their model on the fly just before we wrote the check. They had both come from Kazaa, which was so they couldn't even come into the U.S. because of the they would have had to go to court right away with the music industry. Tesla, I mean, the idea of starting another car company, DeLorean was a total disaster. So were all those other car companies in the U.S. between 1960 and now, and Tesla. SpaceX, we were shooting rockets. Really? I mean, what are we all thinking? So I would say the ones that really won big were the ones where it was long odds at some extraordinary outcome, where the market size was very high, and then I think a lot of times companies don't succeed because the entrepreneurs are not getting along. They both think they should be CEO. They both are second guessing each other on the technology, that kind of thing. They run out of money often because they don't anticipate how much money they're going to need as they go forward. They just can't articulate it. But usually, if an entrepreneur makes 25 pitches, by the 25th pitch, they are articulating beautifully exactly what their business is and what the model is and how big the market is and what the competition looks like, and they're ready to go. Usually failure is a lot of failure is not just running out of money. It's the people.
And it's not apparent from the beginning. It's hard to pick out why you, yeah. So it's not, it's an ongoing process. I mean, carrying on that theme with some of your, you've seeded like, I think 30 unicorns. Now, apart from the little horn in the middle of the head, is there anything that you can see in a company that's you think this could fly? As opposed to just a successful everyday run-of-the-mill investment, what things get you sort of shivers down your spine, or are there projects that, ooh.
Yeah, it's usually I'm a little different from other venture capitalists, and that may be because I'm a seed venture capitalist and I kind of have entrepreneur in my blood. Mm. I look for people with that entrepreneur in their blood. The something's got to change here. Let's get this done. And it drives them. And so I can see it in their eyes or in their heart when I ask them, why are you doing this? But the other thing I find is that a lot of venture capitalists don't, they look and they say, what could go wrong? In fact, it was your first question. Mm. And I say, what if it works? And if it works and it's still meh, still nothing, then don't bother. But if it works and something really extraordinary happens to humans and society, then it might be worth a try.
Okay, I like that. So, in the recent news, well, not that recent, the last little while, with El Salvador adopting Bitcoin as a currency and a lot of other South American countries coming.
Yeah, I think Panama is following.
Yeah, and Uruguay and Paraguay and...
And Ukraine.
Ukraine today, I think there was something, this week.
Yeah.
Do you think, like, obviously when El Salvador came out, the World Bank and the IMF went, oh, don't like that, your loan's in danger. How do you think it'll play out? Obviously, these are kind of vulnerable countries. But how do you think it'll play out for them?
Yeah, that's funny, because I talked to the former president of Argentina, Macri, and I had a great conversation with him about Bitcoin. And then I saw him 2 years later and I said, Bitcoin was at 10,000 for the first time when I first met him. And then 2 years later, it was down to 4,000. And I told him again about Bitcoin. And I said, actually, since we've been together, Bitcoin's fallen from 10,000 to 4,000. But the Argentinian peso has gone from 75 cents down to 25 cents. So I'll make you a bet that if the Argentinian peso outperforms Bitcoin, I'll double my investment in Argentina. And he goes, okay. And then I said, but if Bitcoin outperforms the Argentinian peso, then you have to make Bitcoin your national currency. And he didn't bet with me. And it was because of that. He was concerned about the IMF coming after him. But what he missed was all the flow of entrepreneurial activity that would come into a country that would make Bitcoin a national currency. And I think El Salvador's got that. And I think the IMF loan is in much better shape, because now I'm making a trip to El Salvador. All these other people are going to make trips to El Salvador. Entrepreneurs are going to go there. El Salvadorians are going to know more about a Bitcoin economy than anyone else, because they will be a leader in how you can move Bitcoin into your system. They will be the first to adopt OpenNode for retailers. They'll be the first to create a system of accounting around Bitcoin. All of a sudden, that's going to be, they could potentially be one of the richest countries in the world as we go forward. So I think it was a brilliant move. Mm. I think it was, who was going to go to El Salvador before that? And it had been corrupt. And all of a sudden now it's got a trusted currency. Now it's got Bitcoin. They don't have to deal with sort of a, government currency. Now they've got a new currency they can operate with. In fact, I'd love to operate a venture fund all in Bitcoin, where I invest in Bitcoin. The companies pay their employees and suppliers all in Bitcoin. And the whole thing is a closed loop on the blockchain, so that everything's a smart contract. When a company sells out, it can, all the money goes through a natural waterfall into everybody's Bitcoin wallets. My investors are all paid exactly what they're supposed to be paid. All the we're paid exactly what we're supposed to be paid. The companies get exactly what they're supposed to get. And you build it all into software. It is so much more effective than going through transfer agents and lawyers and accountants and auditors and bookkeepers and whoever else gets in the way of this kind of progress. So yeah, huge breakthrough. And I did suspect that it was going to be a number of these smaller countries who were the first to move. It's just like in a startup, the small companies are the ones who are the first to adopt new technologies, because the big countries or the big companies are like big boats. It's hard for them to move. They can't just turn on a dime and say, let's go do this, unless they do it sort of in a skunk works.
Because there was a story that I read too about Bitcoin Beach, also in Salvador in 2018, where they did an experiment with a little El Zonte. And what I loved about that was they gave everybody $50. This is a bunch of California, sort of hippie guys, whatever. And they paid people, they encouraged, asked everybody to accept Bitcoin, and they gave them all Bitcoin. They also paid for things like, lifeguarding or collecting rubbish. But the really interesting thing that I read about it, and I don't know how successful it was, but the one thing I loved about it, a local said, young people have hope. Before, their joy was to get across the border off into America, but now they can see they're part of a larger community. So I think you're right. It's actually very exciting. I love this stuff. So,
I think if the U.S. government had any guts at all, they would have made those PPP loans all in Bitcoin. And there's no reason they shouldn't do, they've got another $3.4 trillion they're about to spend. That should all be put out in Bitcoin, because then it retains its value, and it doesn't, and it allows true honesty throughout the system. You're not going to see people trying to cheat it, because, you get your Bitcoin wallet, here's your identity. But, it does seem like the people who are running Washington are way past their prime. They don't want change.
No,
they're not trying for change. But I think we're ready for change. This would be a really good time for an innovative leader to step up and say, hey, we should have a Bitcoin economy. We should have all of our payments for whatever it is, for healthcare insurance and welfare and social security, all go out in Bitcoin, so that we have a secure system. We can now there are great identity companies out there that will make it so that people, can't get five welfare checks or whatever happens out there now. So this is a really exciting time. And I fear that the U.S. is falling behind other countries, because they're innovating around these new technologies, and the U.S. is not. Mm-hmm. The U.S. government is not. The private sector sure is.
Yeah.
The entrepreneurs are. The businesses are. But the U.S. government,
it's so big. It's so big. It's
bloated and nobody can make a decision, and they're not a lot of innovative things going on, a lot more backbiting and not so much looking toward the future. So yeah. I'm looking forward to having somebody like Suarez, the mayor of Miami, or become the president. And then all of a sudden, we're going to have somebody who is forward thinking, recognizing the value of all these new technologies, recognizing that we don't want to fall behind.
Yeah. And conversely then, what's your opinion of CBDCs? I mean, on the one hand, like for helicopter money, it's fast. Then the control of the CBD, the centralized aspect, do you have mixed feelings about them, or do you think they're a part of the solution?
Oh, I like all of it. I like every innovation that has happened around Bitcoin, the blockchain, smart contracts. I like level two, level three they're starting to have. I like the NFTs. I like all these things are starting to happen because they are, and whether it's a centralized new token or a decentralized token, I love decentralization, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I like, I like Bitcoin Cash. I like I like what Ripple is doing. I like what I love what Aragon's doing, where they're creating a new form of liquid democracy. I like what Tezos is doing, creating a new form of governance. I like what there are a number of really great innovations out there that are happening. And the reason I like Bitcoin the most is that it is completely decentralized, and that it is global and open and transparent. And the decentralization means that if one government like China says, no Bitcoin here, then Japan pops up and says, we're going to make Bitcoin a national currency. And then all of then there's a brain drain out of China and into Japan. So I think that governments that overregulate do it at their own peril. And I think it's time for, and the US government has done this balancing act. Ideally, they operate with a very light touch. And if you have a very light touch, then great things can happen. I mean, if we had like regulated the internet when it had just gotten started, it would have just crushed us. We would have lost all that economic value, all those jobs. We would have lost all that influence on the world. So,
You're very. I love your answer, because I thought you were saying yes. It's got definitely. You love everything. I don't mean that in an unconditional way. But your passion is huge. So it brings me to a question. I think it's quite important, because you are an important person. When you Google your name, we see your age. Apologies, you're 64. So whether you remember,
They got it wrong.
Oh no, it's even worse. Complain. Okay, but I wanted to ask you a question, because I've been another article too, but I'm looking at people, because I'm 56, right? So I'm a bit old in terms of the industry, and I'm a woman. So I'm kind of like going, I'm this old bird that's going to go around and say, oh, I love this. What are the impediments, and how can you get over for older people saying, come on? I mean, like, not necessarily to work, but just to try to understand it. And old folk aren't, I say old, and I use that, very, very loosely. My mom's 91, she's bright as a button. But why are older people reluctant to, what's that all about? Do you know?
I do. Older people resist change. They don't want a lot of change. They kind of like it the way it is. Look, I'm living okay. I worked really hard to get where I am. I'm living okay. Don't change anything on me. And that's why you see guys like Warren Buffett and the head of JP Morgan, who control all the dollars, not liking the idea of Bitcoin rising above and beyond all of them. But look, if you're old and you think you're old, then you're in trouble. But if you're old, go get yourself a Bitcoin wallet. I mean, just do it.
Yeah.
Buy an NFT. Go try it. See what this is all about. I mean, it's the least you can do. And then all of a sudden you might get interested. And
it might help your pension. You know, if your people are living 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, if you're thinking, because your pension is going to decrease by inflation. And I mean, I've lived long enough to know what inflation does to all of these things, all these investments. What happens when inflation pops in? The worst thing that happens when you have inflation is that it discourages innovation, because people think, if I build some value, the government's just going to take it away from me because of inflation. They will just inflate. So I don't have a store of value. Now Bitcoin solves that problem, but inflation is very dangerous to innovation. It's dangerous to a lot of parts of society, because if you think you've earned a bunch of money and then it just disappears because of inflation, it like drops 10% a year, or in Argentina, it's like 50% a year. There's no incentive to build any value, because so you kind of live for the day. So I would say, yeah, your pension is at risk. You should probably buy some Bitcoin just to hedge your pension. But you should also do it for the good of your brain plasticity.
I like that. I mentioned earlier, so I said older folk, women, you're a third generation financier. Your children are also financiers. And with your daughter in particular, with Jessie, she invests in companies too as well. Does she, or maybe she doesn't, is there any difference in her investment patterns as a woman? Do you see anything differently, or is it just all the same?
Actually, I'm so proud of her every time I talk to her, because I ask her questions about her business and I think, oh my gosh, this is all the thinking I went through when I was getting going. You know, it's like, oh God, I'm on the board of this company and the CEO's spending too much. And they, you know, she's on top of it. She is on it. Her branding is different. She said, I'm only backing entrepreneurs who are women or women in the team. And that limits who she can back, but it doesn't change the nature of the business. It doesn't change what she has to think about, where she has to go with it. She backs a lot of technology companies, a lot of really interesting businesses, and her results are good. I mean, that's what's really cool, is that her results are good. And then of course, Adam runs Boost, and that has been a rocket ship. It's amazingly successful, and he just backs science fiction. He just says science fiction to reality.
I read that. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? So your kids have got very unique.
And then Billy worked with me
for
4 years, and he started Path Ventures fairly recently, and going after consumer technology. So they have focused on industries. I have always kept myself a generalist, but then I'll say, okay, if you're an entrepreneur, like right now, I'll say, if you're an entrepreneur and you're starting a business in any way decentralizing government, I'm interested to see it. I think that might be a big industry. Decentralizing insurance, government,
any of the
really
you, like,
big industries, then I'd be very interested to talk to them.
Yeah, because I think it's even like the state of California, you want to break it up into six different parts. I know that's your interest in the past. So do you think, I'm going to ask you, is there in this beautiful decentralized disruptive future, is there a role for government? Do you think it's more like the hyper-local? Is that where we're going to have true government rather than the centralized body?
I actually think that you need both. You need local and you need a federal government, sort of a federal government. But it will be very interesting. The local will be really tied to, you know, where you're allowed to build or how you're allowed to, you know, move around and that kind of thing. And the federal will be sort of a moral high ground. But I think that most government will be done offshore or up in space, where we will have virtual governance, because I can create an insurance company with surveillance tools and the internet, and you could pay your premiums in Bitcoin, and then even before you knew your house burned down, we will have put a bunch of Bitcoin in your wallet.
Yeah.
And that's a much better insurance company than any, you know, one right now. If you issue a claim, it's a big fight, and then it takes 6 months, you get a big headache, and then finally you get a check.
Small check.
Some sort of a compromise.
Mm.
But imagine getting the money right away. Yeah. It may not be all the money you were hoping for, but you're getting money right away to get you through this period where your house is burned down, or you've had a heart attack, or you've whatever. And the surveillance can be on body, up in the air, by camera. I mean, many ways to surveil. And then by doing that, you can provide great insurance. Well, what is government? But it's 85% insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't we just spin that part out? And then anything that's land-based, allow the government to operate. And by the way, I actually think that these big militaries are just tools of politicians, and they're really, I actually think that we, it won't be long before there's so little difference between living on in one country or another, because we all have access to smartphones. We all can create businesses. They can spread all around the world. So you're going to start seeing the world become much more even. Mm. So keeping people out of a country is probably going to be less and less of a thing. And eventually borders will be people of the world, and we'll just go. And people, I'm hoping and I'm thinking that my grandchildren will ask me the question, you know, maybe I'll be dead, but they'll ask me the question, what are those things on these, and I'll say that's customs buildings. And they'll say, well, what were they for? Well, it was to keep people from going across this little line. Mm. And they'd say, well, that's stupid. And that, I think, will be what the next generation, or the one after that, will experience. They'll experience a world that is wide open. And while we're getting to that world, I actually think that we're right now seeing nationalism and patriotism and all that stuff, and trade wars and all that stuff. It is not helping, but what it is the roar of the dying lion. So when you see a politician saying, oh, we got those guys, they're making trouble for us, da 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 da, you know, I think what happens there is you are seeing the roar of the dying lion. That's a dying lion. The young driven lions, those guys are the ones who are saying, hey, you know, I don't care where you are. You could be in Timbuktu. If you're a good programmer, I want you on my team. If you're a good marketer, I want you on my team. And being tied to a physical presence is no longer relevant. And that's why I look at California and I think, how stupid is this state by putting up a bunch of laws and regulations around employment? Because it's just going to make sure that every business person wants to employ people outside of the state. You know, you start putting these regulations down. Oh, you should do this. You should do this. You should do this. As soon as you start piling those on, the business people go, well, wait a second, how do I work around this? Because this sure isn't working for me. And so they might hire 2 people in California and 300,000 from Pakistan.
Yeah, yeah, no, that makes sense. I have 2 last questions. I'm conscious of your time. One is long, one short. Well, you've been asked many times about selling Bitcoin. Would you sell Bitcoin? You go, why would I sell? Currency of the future for the currency of the past. We're like swapping dollars for Confederate dollars.
Even better than that now. It's sort of the currency of the now.
The now, actually, right.
Bitcoin is the currency of the now, and fiat is the currency of the past. And I look and I think, would I want to sell my euros for drachma or for French francs?
No. Yeah. Irish pounds.
I would want to hold on to euros. But if I can hold on to Bitcoin, I would dump my euros. So I think that is happening. And as soon as I can buy, this is the logic there. As soon as I can buy my food, my clothing, my shelter with Bitcoin. And by the way, I bought a house and the guy asked me for Bitcoin and I said no, but he said I'd take Bitcoin. I was going to donate to Stanford and they said no, we want your Bitcoin, and I said no. But and now there are more and more stores opening up and shops opening up that are accepting Bitcoin because they can use OpenNode and it saves them money. And they get to store some of the Bitcoin because they like it. In fact, I was at a barber in New York City and I said, do you take Bitcoin? And they said, yes. And I went, oh, I was sort of taken aback because it was sort of the first time I had heard yes, but that's starting to happen. And so once that happens, if I can buy my food, clothing, shelter, all for Bitcoin, why would I ever hold dollars? Dollars are subject to political whims. They get printed whenever the politician decides to print them. They just say, oh, okay, we have to make more of these. And then they make more and your dollars are worth less, but nobody makes more Bitcoin. And that's the argument for a decentralized currency that doesn't print more of them, is that the money will be stored, and you get the value of that stored money.
Yeah.
So you're better off operating in Bitcoin. So, I mean, the moment I can buy my food, clothing, shelter, and anything else I want with Bitcoin, I will sell all my dollars into Bitcoin.
Okay, that's interesting. My final question is, I didn't realize you have an honorary doctorate from Trinity College in Dublin. That's my old alma mater. So my question is, when are you next coming to Dublin and can we have a coffee?
I don't know. I might be in Dublin sometime. One of my good buddies, Paddy Cosgrave, is from Dublin.
And are you going to the Web Summit then?
Yeah. But that won't be in Dublin. That's in
Lisbon. Lisbon. I'm going to, I might see you there. I'm going to the Web Summit next month, November. Fantastic. So I might see you there. Oh, I knew Paddy vaguely. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've loved your answers.
Good questions too. That was fun. I'll bet people like your podcast.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Well, I try not to ask the obvious ones.
Good. Send me a link. I'll post it up.
Thank you. And I'll see you in Lisbon then. See you next month. See you in November at Web Summit. Tell Paddy I'm coming over. Thank you so much. Thank you, Tim. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter @Irish_Tech News, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.